Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Leviticus chapter 23. I'm going to do the first half of the chapter, Feast of the Lord, part A. Part B is going to be the last half of the chapter, verses 23 through 44 in our next audio. Our context is this. In the previous chapter, chapter 22, the entire chapter, we looked at how a priest was to maintain his holiness by keeping certain laws, and we also looked at how sacrifices could be maintained as holy also. So we start now in verses 1 and 2 of Leviticus 23. Again, we're talking about the feast, the Sabbath first, and then all the other annual feasts of Israel. In this audio, we're only going to talk about the Sabbath, the Passover, the Feast of First Fruits, and the Feast of Weeks. Now, we'll start in Leviticus 23, 1 through 2. The Lord spoke again to Moses, saying, Speak to the sons of Israel, and say to them, The Lord's appointed times, which you shall proclaim on as holy convocations, my appointed times are these. Now, verse 1 says, The Lord spoke again to Moses. That's outside of the tent of meeting. He's been speaking to Moses for a long, long time. As we go through the book of Leviticus, God says to Moses, The Lord's appointed times, which you shall proclaim as holy convocations. Holy Convocations is translated in the Holman Christian Study Bible as Sacred Assemblies. Holy Convocations, that's a nice translation too. We could just say Feast, except in the last half of the chapter, the Day of Atonement is hard to call it a feast because it's more like a fast. But the Hebrew word here that's translated as Holy Convocation or as Sacred Assembly is used both for feast and fast. So, doesn't matter. We'll just use the NASB here, Holy Convocations. Now, before we get started in discussing these Holy Convocations, I want to make some preliminary basic distinctions in order to keep ourselves from going crazy as we go through this. First of all, I want to make a distinction between daily burnt offerings and what I call extra offerings. The burnt offerings were daily, morning and evening. They were burnt offerings, which could be a bull, a ram, or a goat. That's morning and evening, daily sacrifices. We've already talked about that, Leviticus chapter 1. But there's some extra offerings. Now, the extra offerings are offerings for the annual feast, not daily, but for the annual feast. And they are extra burnt offerings, extra sin offerings, extra peace offerings. And I'm going to, as we go through, show you what those extra offerings are, or maybe I'll just refer to them en masse when I summarize them in a table that I'm going to get to in just a minute. All right, that's the first distinction, daily burnt offerings versus annual extra offerings that are offered on these feast days. Second distinction is between a weekly Sabbath and an annual Sabbath, and the distinction between a weekly Sabbath, an annual Sabbath, and a high Sabbath. Let's start with a weekly Sabbath. This is the familiar Sabbath. It happened on Saturday. I'm talking about a Sabbath day now, by the way, not a Sabbath year or a Jubilee Sabbath at the end of 49 years. We're not talking about that. We're talking about daily Sabbaths. The weekly daily Sabbath was on a Saturday, as we all know. And on that day, Israelite could do no work. He couldn't fix his meals, couldn't light a fire on Saturday and so forth. Now, an annual Sabbath, that was the one that occurred during an annual feast. That's why we can call it an annual feast, or I can call it a festival Sabbath. Now, an annual Sabbath may or may not fall on Saturday. It may or may not fall on a weekly Sabbath. It could fall on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, depending on various factors. And on an annual Sabbath, no work could be done. Meals could be fixed on an annual Sabbath, but no work could be done. Now, there was something called a high Sabbath, or sometimes called a high day. That's one of the seven special Sabbaths that occurred during an annual festival. Not all festival days were high Sabbaths, but some of the festival days were high Sabbath. For example, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the first day and the seventh day of that festival were high Sabbaths, and they did not necessarily occur on Saturday. Now, most of the annual Sabbaths were high Sabbaths, I'm not even sure. I'd have to go through and look to see whether there was an annual Sabbath that was not a high Sabbath. Most of them were high Sabbaths. So generally, I'm going to, just to make it easy, say, just when I refer to Sabbaths, I'm going to refer to weekly daily Sabbaths, which is the ordinary Sabbath we know. And then I'm going to say a high Sabbath, which is a festival Sabbath, which happens annually, not daily. So that'll keep some things simple in our mind. And believe me, we need to make things as simple as we can going through this. Now, let me give you a summary of the festivals before we get going. First of all, what are the offerings during a festival? Well, first of all, you got the normal daily offerings that have to be offered before anything else. That's one lamb in the morning and one lamb in the evening. except on Sabbath when it's two lambs in the morning and one lamb in the evening. So you got an extra lamb in the morning on a Sabbath day. All right, that's the morning and evening sacrifices. Well, no problem there. Now, the seven high days that I mentioned, they're all in Leviticus 23, our chapter here. I'm going to mention some of them. Three of them in verses 7, 8, and 21. We'll mention the other four in our next audio. These high days are Sabbaths. They were to be treated like the seventh-day Sabbath, even though they could occur on a day other than the Saturday of the week, as I already mentioned. On a high day, besides the daily regular offerings, morning and evening, lamb, the priest offered two additional lambs after the morning service, and then the extra sacrifices, which I'm going to talk about. Well, in other words, the annual Sabbath works as far as burnt offerings, daily offerings go. It worked just like the Sabbath as far as daily burnt offerings, because on a normal weekly Sabbath, there were two lambs in the morning. On a high Sabbath, well, not exactly, there's extra lambs, not exactly the same amount. On a high Sabbath, there's two additional lambs after the morning service. So if the high Sabbath was on a Monday in the morning, you would offer one lamb for the daily sacrifice, and then you would offer two additional lambs because it's a high Sabbath. Now, if the high Sabbath happened to coincide with a weekly Sabbath, then there would be one lamb for the normal morning burnt offering, then the extra lamb because it's a weekly Sabbath day, so that's two lambs, and then another two lambs because it's a high Sabbath. That would be four on that day, in addition to all the other extra sacrifices, which we'll talk about in a minute. Now, the seven high days were the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's Nisan 15. We'll talk about that in a minute. The seventh day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. I said the eighth day. It's the seventh day. Nisan 21. That's also a high day, high Sabbath. Then we got the Feast of Weeks on Sivan 6, the Feast of Trumpets, Tishri 1, the Day of Atonement, Tishri 10, the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, which is Tishri 15. That's a week-long festival. The first day of it was a high Sabbath. And then there's something called the seventh high day. It's something called the Last Great Day, which was on Tishri 22, Leviticus, that we'll talk about in our next audio, Leviticus chapter 23. This chapter calls it the eighth day. But we'll just call it the Last Great Day because that's what everybody does. That's a high Sabbath. So there's your seven high Sabbaths. Now, I said there were extra offerings on a festival day besides the daily burnt offerings. For example, on a new moon, that's first of the month, you had two bulls, one ram, and seven lambs, and one goat. Extra. Feast of Unleavened Bread, there was day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of that feast. On every day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which happens right after Passover, right after Passover in the spring, day was 1 through 7 on each one of those days. Two extra bulls, one extra ram, seven extra lambs, and one extra goat. A lot of animals. Feast of Weeks, which is 6 of Sivan in the early summer. Two extra bulls, one extra ram, seven extra lambs, and one extra goat. And we'll see later that in one place it's one extra bull and two extra rams instead of two extra bulls and one extra ram. We'll talk about that little problem when we get there. Feast of Trumpets. One extra bull, one extra lamb, one extra bull, one extra ram, and seven extra lambs, those are extra burnt offerings, and then one sin offering, a goat. The Day of Atonement, we got one extra bull, one extra ram, seven extra lambs, and one goat that's offered. There's also a scapegoat, a live goat that runs off into the wilderness. So you see all these extra sacrifices in addition to the normal daily burnt offerings. We got extra burnt offerings, extra sin offerings, and we'll see here in just a minute. The Feast of Weeks has an extra peace offering too, but most of them don't have an extra peace offering. Now, the Feast of Tabernacles is interesting because there are 7 days of that feast. That's in September, October, Tishri. The first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, there's 13 extra bulls for a burnt offering. The second day, there's 12 extra bulls. The third day, 11 extra bulls. The fourth day, 10 extra bulls. The fifth day, 9 extra bulls. The sixth day, 8 extra bulls. And the seventh day, 7 extra bulls, which is strange to say the least. We'll talk about that when we get there. Next audio. And on all 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles, you have for a burnt offering, you have two extra rams for a burnt offering, and you have 14 extra lambs for a burnt offering. Lots of animals. I'm telling you, the Feast of Tabernacles will smell like a great barbecue. There's lots of roasted animals going on. And in the Last Great Day, there was for burnt offerings, one extra bull, one extra ram, and 7 extra lambs for a burnt offering, and one extra goat for a sin offering. little pattern here. You'll see most of the festivals have a special sin offering offered, and it's always a goat. We also see that there's lots and lots and lots of lambs that are burnt, more lambs than anything else. 98 lambs on the Feast of Tabernacles, 49 lambs for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now, some other side notes, the burnt offerings, all these extra burnt offerings that I just talked about, they were offered along with their grain offerings and drink offerings. Grain offerings are pretty standard. Chapter 2 of Leviticus, drink offerings, a quart of wine poured out on the altar. We're not going to get into that because that's pretty standard. Now, in order to understand all the sacrifices that go along with these festivals, we need to remember what the three basic festivals are. This is extremely important. If you can't keep this in your head, you'll get lost in a minute going through Leviticus chapter 23. So let's read Exodus 23 verses 14 through 17, and we'll see the three basic feasts of Israel. Exodus 23 verse 14. Three times a year you shall celebrate a feast for me. You shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's the first one. That's the seven-day feast that came after Passover, Nisan 14, March, April, Passover. Nisan 14, Feast of Unleavened Bread, started the next day and lasted for seven more days, from 15th to the 21st of Nisan. For 7 days you are to eat unleavened bread as I commanded you. At the appointed time in the month of Abib, that's Nisan, Babylonian name for Nisan, for in it you came out of Egypt. Verse 16, Exodus 23, also, this is the second feast, also you shall observe the Feast of the Harvest, sometimes translated Feast of Weeks or Pentecost. That's in May, June of the summer, roughly 50 days after a certain day in the middle of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which I'll talk about more precisely in a minute. And that's the first of the first fruits of the wheat harvest. It's a one-day feast. Third major Jewish feast that had to be celebrated by the Israelites was the Feast of the Ingathering, as the NASB has it. The ESV, I think, has the Feast of Booths, Feast of Tabernacles, the King James has. I'm just going to call it the Feast of Booths. It's also a harvest festival, later than the early summer festival of the Feast of Harvest. This is the Feast of Booths, which occurred when the grapes and olives were getting ready to be harvested, after they'd been harvested, or getting ready to be harvested, I should say, at the end of the year, because it's September/October, Tishri. Three times a year, all your males shall appear before the Lord God. So this is the famous passage that talks about the famous three festivals for the Israelites. Now, there's lots of details about these festivals. I'm going to be going over a lot of them in this chapter, but there's other places, too, that you can learn about these feasts. Exodus chapter 34, verses 18 through 25. Two chapters in Numbers, 28 and 29. And those two chapters are the fullest and closest parallel to Leviticus, and those two chapters specify in great detail the offerings to be made at each feast. Now, I'm going to try to save most of the discussion of Numbers 28 and 29 until the day that we get there, but every now and then we'll take a peek ahead and look at what those two chapters say about the feast as listed here in Leviticus 23. Also, we can look in Deuteronomy chapter 16, verses 1 through 17, and get some more information. So there's lots and lots of stuff on the Jewish feast. So now we go to Leviticus 23, verse 3. For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Sabbath of complete rest, a holy convocation. You shall not do any work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord and all your dwellings. So now the Sabbath is listed along with all the feasts, even though it's not an annual feast. It's a weekly feast, a holy convocation, a holy sacred assembly. It's complete rest. Of course, this is the famous Sabbath day of which we all are familiar, Exodus 16:23. Tomorrow is the Sabbath observance, the holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all is left over put aside to be kept until morning. That means do it the day before. You don't even cook on Saturday. You're supposed to remember it to keep it holy. Exodus 20, that's one of the Ten Commandments. Exodus 23, verse 12, 6 days are you to do your work, but on the seventh day you shall cease from labor, so that your ox and donkey may rest, the son of your female slave, as well as your stranger, may refresh themselves, so everybody rest on the Sabbath day, as we all know. Now, the NIV Study Bible says that it's interesting that here, the Sabbath day is associated with the three national feasts that I just talked about. Unleavened Bread, Passover/Unleavened Bread, Feast of Weeks, Pentecost, number 2, and number 3, the Feast of Booths. Now, I mentioned in my summary that there were two additional burnt offerings that were lambs that were offered every weekly Sabbath in the morning. I mentioned that. How do we know that? Well, because of Numbers 28, verses 9 through 10. Then on the Sabbath day, two male lambs, 1 year old, without defect, and 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil as a grain offering, and his drink offering. This is the burnt offering of every Sabbath in addition to the continual burnt offering and his drink offering. So every morning you had a burnt offering and also the drink offering that went with the burnt offering. That goes without saying. And then in addition to, this is what Numbers 28 verse 10 says, in addition to that continual daily burnt offering, every day we have a burnt offering on Sabbath. When it's Sabbath, we offer two extra lambs. Now, Adam Clark says that the reason the Sabbath is mentioned here in advance of all the feasts of Israel is because the Sabbath is the, quote, first and greatest solemnity. In other words, it's heap big important. And that's why it's mentioned. Sabbath is called a rest. On the seventh day, there's a Sabbath of complete rest. That type is referred to in the antitype of our rest in Christ. The Sabbath rest is typical of our rest in Christ. We cease from our labors in order to participate in his salvation. We rest from our labors. Hebrews 4:1, therefore, while the promise to enter his rest remains, let us fear that none of you should miss it. Of course, the readers of the book of Hebrews were missing it because they were apostatizing and going back into Judaism and missing God's rest, trying to do Jesus' work for him. So the Sabbath rest is a beautiful type of our rest in Christ. This idea of working on Saturday as being bad, as being illegal, it was so illegal that the penalty was death. Exodus 31:15, for 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Sabbath of complete rest. Complete, that means no cooking, no laborious work, no doing your job, no plowing the field, no fixing, mending fences, all of that stuff. No, you don't do any of that. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death. Serious business. And one guy was caught doing that, if you recall, and was executed. Now notice there's a phrase here. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwellings. In verse 3, Leviticus 23, in all your dwellings. Other feasts were done in the sanctuary. The festivities were done in the sanctuary or in the courtyard of the tabernacle. But the Sabbath was done everywhere. Even to this day, Sabbath festivities are done in a Jewish person's home on Friday night. We go now to Leviticus 23, verses 4 through 5. These are the appointed times of the Lord, holy convocations which you shall proclaim at the times appointed for them. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at twilight is the Lord's Passover. The first month, of course, is Nisan. So Nisan 14, we got Passover. Now, all of these days that are going to be mentioned, these are the appointed times. They're appointed prospectively. In other words, they're appointed for future observance. They're not going to observe, probably. Some people dispute this, but they're probably not going to observe a lot of these festivals while they're wandering around in the wilderness. Maybe so. I've seen a lot of dispute on that. Jameson, Foster, and Brown say they're not going to. Now, in the first month, as I said, that's Nisan. Nisan is the Babylonian name. Canaanite name was Abib, so we need to learn both of those month names because they show up a lot because Passover is so important. So Nisan or Abib, we need to remember 14 because that's when the Passover was. It was fixed on the calendar. It's not like Thanksgiving, which rolls around in the calendar in November, but it's on a specific day like Christmas, December 25th. And as I said earlier, Nisan is March and April in our system, early spring. The Hebrews had three systems for naming the months, interestingly enough, as the NIV Study Bible says. Sometimes they would just number the month in the first month, in the second month, in the third month. Sometimes they would use the Canaanite names, like Abib. But there are only four Canaanites known today, Abib and Bul and his two others. I tend to not want to use those because there's only four of them. The Babylonian names are all 12 known, and they're still used today. And Nisan is a Babylonian name, so that's what we're going to call March, April. We're going to call it Nisan. Now, March and April is between winter and summer, so Passover occurred in spring between winter and summer. Why is this a good time? Jameson, Fossen, Brown makes several points here. The winter time would be a bad time to travel Jerusalem, which the males were supposed to do, so the spring is much easier. The summertime, people were too busy harvesting to travel to celebrate this feast, but in the springtime, if you go down to Passover, they didn't have a lot to do, so they had time to travel to go to Jerusalem to celebrate the feast. Now, Nisan, March/April, was probably chosen because it avoided association with Egyptian idolatry, because there were more Jewish festivals in Nisan than Egyptian idolatrous holidays during the same period of time. All right, so as we continue, we've already left Sabbath in the previous verse 3. Now we're in the Passover, verse 4, Nisan 14. Of course, we all know that's because of the Israelites leaving Egypt. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail on that because that's well known. some other scriptures very briefly about Passover, Exodus 12:11. Now you shall eat it in this manner, with your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. That's why they ate unleavened bread. They didn't have time to leaven the bread, so they ate unleavened bread, and so that became symbolic of haste. Exodus 12:14. Now this day will be a memorial to you, and you shall celebrate it as a feast to the Lord. Throughout your generations, you are to celebrate it as a permanent ordinance. So this was an annual feast, every Nisan 14th, Passover. Exodus 12:21. Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, go and take for yourselves lambs according to your families and slay the Passover lamb. So there was a particular lamb offered to that Passover meal, and all this was talked about in Exodus 12, and we can go back and listen to that audio, or you can study Exodus 12 if you want to learn some more about Passover, but that's enough for my purposes here. So let's go now to verses 6, 7, and 8 of Leviticus 23. Then on the 15th day of the same month, that's Nisan, the day after Passover, because it's the 15th day, there's the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. That's capital F, capital U, capital E, Feast of Unleavened Bread. It's the name of a feast. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall not do any laborious work. Now that first day, holy convocation, that particular day is a high Sabbath, because that's the first day of the feast. Holy convocation, that's where you get the idea that it's a high Sabbath. You shall not do any laborious work, but for 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to the Lord. On the 7th day is a holy convocation, another holy convocation, another high Sabbath. You shall not do any laborious work. Now the 15th day of Nisan is the same day the Israelites left Egypt after the Passover, which is on the 14th. They left with their dough and their leaven, and they headed out to the wilderness. They didn't have enough time to use the leaven, and in fact, the fact that they didn't have leaven is said to be the reason for the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. Exodus 12:17, you shall also observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this very day, that's Nisan 15, I brought your host out of the land of Egypt. Therefore, you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a permanent ordinance. On this very day, Nisan the 15th, you left, and so that's when we're going to start the Feast of Unleavened Bread, because you left with bread that was unleavened. Now, the Feast of Unleavened Bread is described in great detail in Exodus chapter 12, and Exodus chapter 13, and Exodus 23, and Exodus 34, Numbers 28, lots of stuff about the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So we won't go through the particulars, since I've already done that mostly already in Exodus 12, but just briefly, on the first day, you remove leaven from your house. And by the way, the 21st day is mentioned by name in Exodus 12:18. That's the seventh day of the Festival of Unleavened Bread. You don't eat bread on that day, and that is a holy day, a high Sabbath day, the seventh day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And if you read through most of the descriptions of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, what's the main thing you read? They don't eat leavened bread. Now, I'm going to talk about the sacrifices that are offered at this feast in just a minute, but as far as the other things they did, they just basically didn't eat leavened bread. Now, they're told on the high Sabbath day, which again could either be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. It could be Saturday too. But they're not to do laborious work. That's opposed to household work. They could do household work according to John Gill. They could bake bread. They could boil or roast meat. But not on a weekly Sabbath. They couldn't do that. But they couldn't do laborious work such as agriculture, plowing, manufacturing, planning agriculture or manufacturing, I guess is a strong word, but making handicrafts, any mechanical business you can't do. Then in verse 8, Leviticus 23, we read that the Israelites were to present an offering by fire. Actually, in verse 8, it says, for 7 days you should present an offering by fire. Now, what offerings are given on those 7 days? Well, I quoted from my summary earlier in this audio, so let's go back and look at the Festival of Unleavened Bread, and we look at the extra offerings. For 7 days, 2 extra bulls. That's 14 total bulls. Rams for a burnt offering, 1 a day. That's 7 days, 7 rams. Lambs, 7 a day for 7 days. That's 49 rams. Goats for a sin offering, 7 days. That makes 7 goats. Lots of cooking going on. Lots of sacrifices going on. Now, I mentioned all those extra bulls, 2 bulls, 1 ram, and 7 lambs each day that are extra. I say extra in addition to the early daily continuous burnt offerings, and of course the extra gold also for a sin offering. How do we know that? Numbers 28:19. You shall present an offering by fire, a burnt offering to the Lord, 2 bulls and 1 ram and 7 male lambs 1 year old. There's where you get the extra burnt offerings daily for the festival of unleavened bread, and also 1 goat, Numbers 28:22, and 1 male goat for a sin offering to make atonement for yourselves. So that's how we know about the extra offerings. The 7th day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is the 21st day of Nisan. And now we go to Leviticus 23, verses 9 through 10. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land which I am going to give to you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. First, we notice that these festival regulations only apply when you enter the land. Verse 10, when you enter the land, which makes it sound like the first fruits is not to be celebrated during the traveling through the wilderness, because there was no harvest during the wilderness, because I doubt they planted too much in the desert. They probably had to live off their livestock. You shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest. Now, what harvest are they talking about? Is the law talking about here? It's talking about the barley harvest. Barley harvest was the first grain that came in. It came in basically in Nisan, March or April. And so since the Festival of Unleavened Bread is in Nisan, right after Passover, the Festival of the First Fruits happened right smack dab in the Festival of Unleavened Bread. So we're going to call this at least this is what the English Standard Version heading says here, the Festival of the First Fruits. I don't know if you want to call it a festival. That seems kind of strong to me. But anyway, in the middle of this Festival of Unleavened Bread, you shall bring in the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. And that means that the Israelite had to cut, once his barley harvest came in, he had to cut some of it down, make a sheaf of it, and bring it to the priest. And the priest would then put it in the stash offered to the priest, probably to be eaten by the priest, maybe even shared by the priest in a peace offering later on with some offerors. Now, why did the people have to do this? Offering the first fruits of the barley harvest showed people's dependence on God and thankfulness to Him for their food. It sanctified the whole harvest. Romans 11:16 says this, if the first piece of dough is holy, the lump is also, and if the root is holy, the branches are too. So that's the same idea. The first of something represents the last of something. Kind of like the tithe. If a person gives 10% of his income to God, that symbolizes that the other 90% belongs to God also. This idea of first fruits was also a type of the resurrection of Christ, 1 Corinthians 15:20. But now Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who are asleep. So Jesus rose, that's the first fruits, because he represents a whole later harvest that's coming of a whole bunch of resurrected Christians who are going to come later. Now, verse 11 of Leviticus 23 tells us when this waving of the barley sheaf occurred. Leviticus 23, verse 11, he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord for you to be accepted. That he refers to the priest that was given the first fruits. Before he puts it away in the foodstuffs pantry, wherever he keeps it, he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord. Now, waving the sheaf before the Lord means going before the bronze altar and waving it left to right, and that shows that it's going to God. This belongs to God. Now you need to do that. It says, in order for you to be accepted. Who's the you? It's referring to people who bring in the sheaf of the first fruits, the ordinary Israelites. Now, this verse says the sheaf of barley grain was waved before the Lord. Somewhere I read, I don't have a citation in my notes, but somewhere I read that it was also waved to and fro before the people, calling their attention to the work of divine providence. So that makes sense, actually. The priest would take the first fruit sheath and wave it before the people. It says, look at here, this fruit, this first fruits, this barley grain keeps you alive. Here it is, guys. And then he turns around and he waves it before the altar and says, I'm giving it to God because it's God who gave you that grain. Now, when did this occur? It says, on the day after the Sabbath. What Sabbath? This is not a weekly Sabbath. We just talked about the Festival of Unleavened Bread on Nisan 15. That was a high Sabbath. And so that's the Sabbath it's referring to. Not a weekly Sabbath, but one of the annual high Sabbaths, festival Sabbath. On the day after the Sabbath, that would be Nisan the 16th. So now we know when the Festival of First Fruits is, Nisan the 16th. John Gill actually states that let you rely on him for authority instead of me. But that's when it is. I don't think there's any controversy over this. This is 16th of Nisan. That's the waving of the first fruit. Now we go to Leviticus chapter 23, verses 12 and 13. Now on the day when you wave the sheaf, that's Nisan 16, you shall offer a male lamb 1 year old without defect for a burnt offering to the Lord. Now this is an extra burnt offering lamb. It's not mentioned. I didn't mention it in my table, in my summary table of all the extra sacrifices that were to be made. And I don't know why I didn't. I could easily put it in there and just say Festival of First Fruits, one extra lamb. But there weren't any extra bulls or lambs or goats. Rams. No extra bulls, no extra rams, no extra goats. There was one extra lamb for the festival of the waving of the first fruit of the barley harvest. We continue in Leviticus 23, verse 13. That extra lamb, by the way, was an extra burnt offering, which is typical here. The only extra offerings there were for these festivals that weren't burnt offerings were sin offerings. All of them had sin offerings, and one of them, Feast of Weeks, had an extra peace offering, but most all of the extra offerings are burnt offerings. Verse 13, Leviticus 23, it's, meaning the male lamb, the extra burnt offering for the first fruits ceremony. Its grain offering shall then be 2/10 of an ephah. 2/10 of an ephah is 4 quarts, according to Holman Christian Study Bible. A bushel is about 30-something quarts, so you can get an idea. It's not a lot. Grain offering, a fine flour mixed with oil. You remember, the priest takes the flour, mixes with oil, and sprinkles some on the altar for God's portion. And then the rest is baked into cakes or wafers, and then they eat the grain offering. So that's your grain offering. That's in chapter 2 of Leviticus. An offering by fire to the Lord. The male lamb for the burnt offering and the grain offering are, of course, burnt on the altar with its drink offering, 1/4 of a hen, 1 quart of wine. Now, there's one interesting thing we need to look at in verse 13. The grain offering for this male lamb that is offered on the day of first fruits, the waving of the barley sheaf, the grain offering in verse 13 is 2/10 of an ephah, 4 quarts, whereas the normal grain offering was 1/10 of an ephah, 2 quarts of grain. Now, why is that? Well, let's first see where the normal grain offering accompanying a burnt offering was 1/10 of an ephah, Exodus 29:40, when the first lamb with the first lamb offer 2 quarts. That's Holman Christian Study Bible, NASB, is 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1 quart of oil. So it's different. Why? Why is there a double amount of grain here on the first fruits festival or first fruits ceremony? The offering of the first fruits of barley sheaf. Why a double amount of grain offering? Well, it's because that grain offering was a special token of gratitude for the grain harvest. That makes sense. It's a little detail that, unless somebody points it out to you, you never see. Now, the wine offering that's offered with this extra grain offering and burnt offering of this lamb, that's normal. 1/4 of a hen, 1 quart, 1/4 of a hen, 1 quart. All the wine offerings are like that, and they just would pour the wine on the fire. Through the grate of the altar right down there on the fire, and it would go up in smoke. Now, the drink offering was not doubled as the grain offering was. John Gill says the reason for that is because this festival of first fruits celebrated the harvest, not the vintage. Well, I'll be curious as to when we get there whether it was 2/4 or 1/2 of a hen of wine that was poured out at the Feast of Tabernacles. I don't think so. I'll check it when we get there. We go now to Leviticus 23, verse 14. Until this same day, until you have brought in the offering of your God, this is 16th Nisan, first fruits, barley sheaf, waved. Until this same day, until you have brought in the offering of your God, you shall eat neither bread, nor roasted grain, nor new growth. It is to be a perpetual statute throughout your generations and all your dwelling places. Now, if the Israelites would eat the grain that they harvest before they gave a sheath to God first, God wouldn't get the first fruits, and he would be dishonored. The first of everything belongs to God. We are second. God is first. Now, this rule is a perpetual statute, and that's mentioned over and over again through Leviticus, and it does not mean forever and ever and ever. It means until the Messiah comes and does away with the Old Testament order, of course. Now, this is a perpetual statute throughout your generations and all your dwelling places. Now, somebody, some commentator, I didn't put his name down, says that the dwelling places would be the normal place where the grain offering would be offered. Well, I don't know how that's so. The normal place the grain offering would be in the tabernacle courtyard as you give the grain to the priest. So I think that why the dwelling places is mentioned here, this statute, is effective in an Israelite's dwelling place is because the Israelites were told not to eat in their, and where do they eat? In their dwelling places. So they're not to eat in their dwelling places as a perpetual statute. At least they're not supposed to eat until they offer that first fruit, that first sheaf of barley. We go now to Leviticus 23, verses 15 through 16. You shall also count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, that's again, Nisan 15, that's the first high Sabbath of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the day after Passover. You take that day and you count from that, or you count from the day after that, from the day when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering, that's Nisan 16, you count from that because from there shall be seven complete Sabbaths, so that's 49 days. You shall count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. All right, seven Sabbaths is 49 days, and verse 16 says one day after that is 50 days. Then you shall present a new grain offering to the Lord. So now we're up to the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Harvest, the Feast of Pentecost, because Pentecost means count 50. Penta is 50, and cost is somehow from Greek. I read this somewhere. I didn't check the Greek. Means count. So count 50. 50 days. Now, when do you start counting the 50 days? From the time of first fruits, from the time when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering of the barley, the first fruits of the barley harvest, which is 16th of Nisan. You take that day and you start counting from there. Now, the counting of the 50 days is not controversial because it ends up on 6th of Sivan, and that's when we have the Feast of Weeks. So I'm not going to get into the mechanics of counting the 50 days, but when you count, you always have to worry, do I include the first day or not? And if I had the energy, I guess I could sit down and count them out myself, but I'm not going to worry about it since it's not controversial. The day after the Sabbath, count from Nisan 16. I assume you include that day, and then you count all the way until you get to the seventh Sabbath. Go one day after that, you get to 6th Sivan, and now you're ready for the Feast of Weeks, or the Feast of Harvest, or the Feast of Pentecost, whatever you want to call it. Now, on that day, 6th of Sivan, you shall present a new grain offering. That's the first fruits of the wheat offering, because 6th of Sivan is in May-June of the year, early summer, and that's when the wheat came in. Now, I said in verse 15, the day after the Sabbath, that Sabbath was the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the high Sabbath, Nisan 15th, Gil, Clark, and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown all agree with me. That's what it is. Some people say it's the seventh-day Sabbath, which fell in the week of unleavened bread, because you got 7 days. That means a Saturday is going to roll around there somewhere and land in that week, and you start counting from that Saturday. I don't think so. We're not going to do that. If you did that, you wouldn't end up with a fixed date of 6th Sivan. It seems like most of the sources agree that Feast of Tabernacles, a Feast of a Harvest, started on 6th Sivan. Now, this is a harvest festival celebrating the gathering in of the wheat harvest. It's interesting that later Judaism took it and changed it into a commemoration of the giving of the law at Mount Sinai. There's no evidence for this in the Old Testament. I remember going to a Gentile wannabe Jew conference where everything was Jewish, Jewish, Jewish. No Jews there, a lot of Gentiles, but everybody's talking about how we need to be Jewish. And they said, we're going to celebrate the Feast of Weeks. And I thought, oh, this ought to be interesting. And I saw this big canopy and then talking about Moses and the Mount Sinai. I said, what's this got to do with the Feast of Weeks? Absolutely nothing. It's all tradition. Now, at this Feast of Weeks, it's interesting that there were two wave loaves offered. So the first fruits of the wheat harvest were baked into loaves, two loaves, and the wave loaf was waved before the altar like the sheaf of barley. And we'll see more about those wave loaves here in Leviticus 23, verse 17. You shall bring in from your dwelling places two loaves of bread for a wave offering. So you see, they didn't bring in the grain like with the barley. They actually took the wheat grain and turned it into two loaves of bread. Two loaves of bread for a wave offering made of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be of a fine flour, baked with leaven as first fruits to the Lord. Now, the interesting thing about these two loaves of bread at the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Harvest, is that they were leavened, not unleavened. Remember the common meal offerings that we read about in Leviticus, they're all with unleavened bread. Leviticus 2:4, Leviticus 2 is the chapter that talks about grain offerings. Now, when you bring an offering of a grain offering baked in an oven, it shall be unleavened cakes of fine flour, or unleavened wafers spread with oil. So John Gill says that because the loaves were leavened, that means they were made into something you could eat that would taste good, like bread, and so it was probably offered to the priest so the priest could have some bread to eat. Now, why the difference here between the leavened and unleavened bread? Jameson Fawcett Brown says that unleavened bread was used at the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and also during the sacrifices, to represent the haste that Israel left Egypt. They didn't have time to leaven the bread, so they ate unleavened bread, and that's what we're used to. But here we've got leavened bread, which means that leaven can't always mean sin, now can it? That's an analogy that it's sometimes pushed too far. Leavened bread is used here for the Feast of Harvest because the bread, the loaves, were a tribute of gratitude to God for the Israelites' daily food. And daily food was not unleavened. Now notice these two loaves of wave offering made out of wheat for the wheat harvest. They were made of 2/10 of an ephah. Now, it doesn't say whether it's 2/10, 1/10 for each of the loaves, or whether each loaf was 2/10, so I'm not really sure how that works. If it is that each loaf had 2/10, that would mean that that would be double what a normal grain offering consisted of, just like the grain offering that accompanied the extra lamb burnt offering on the day of first fruits of the barley harvest, which was during the Feast of Unleavened Bread back in March, April, Nisan. Well, I think it's probably just as easy to say that 2/10 of an ephah refers to 1/10 for one loaf and 1/10 for the other loaf and be done with it. Now, this first fruits, the offering of two leavened loaves waved before the Lord, these first fruits are not mentioned anywhere else in the Old Testament scriptures except right here. Now, the idea of first fruits, of course, is in the New Testament. Romans 8:23, and not only this, but also we ourselves having the first fruits of the Spirit, since we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. So the ultimate adoption, when the adoption procedures are complete, our body is completely redeemed, we're glorified. That's the harvest, the first fruits of the Holy Spirit that we have now before the harvest. I've already mentioned when, with reference to the first fruits of the barley harvest, 1 Corinthians 15, 20-23, but now Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who are asleep. He's raised first. He's got a whole harvest of resurrected Christians coming after him. We go now to Leviticus 23, verses 18 through 19. Along with the bread, that's the two loaves of wheat bread for the wave offering, for the first fruits, dedication of the first fruits of the wheat harvest. Along with the bread, you shall present 7 1-year-old male lambs without defect and a bull of the herd and 2 rams. They are to be a burnt offering to the Lord with their grain offering and their drink offerings, an offering by fire of a soothing aroma to the Lord. You shall offer 1 male goat for a sin offering and 2 male lambs 1-year-old for a sacrifice of peace offerings. Now, let's go back to my summary table of offerings. We see the Feast of Weeks here. It's a one-day festival. On that one day, there were 7 extra lambs for a burnt offering and 1 extra goat for a sin offering. No problem there. But for the burnt offering that was a bull or a ram, we do have a problem. In Leviticus, it says that there is 1 bull extra offered for a burnt offering and 2 rams extra offered. However, in Numbers 28, verse 27, we see the opposite. You shall offer a burnt offering for a soothing aroma to the Lord, 2 young bulls, 1 ram, 7 male lambs 1-year-old. So in Leviticus, we got 1 bull, 2 rams. In Numbers, we got 2 bulls and 1 ram. How do we reconcile the two places? I've got 3 options. The first option, this is according to John Gill and Matthew Poole, is the law allowed the priest to choose either amount as his option. He can either offer 2 bulls and 1 ram according to Numbers or 1 ram and 2 bulls according to Leviticus. My problem with that solution is that the Levitical laws don't seem too optional to me. Maimonides, the famous Jewish rabbi, quoted by John Gill, says that the amounts were additive. In other words, 1 bull and 2 bull, 1 bull in Leviticus plus 2 bulls in Numbers means 3 bulls altogether. And 1 ram in Numbers and 2 rams in Leviticus, add them together and you get 3 rams. And then you take the 7 lambs in both places, add them together and you get 14 lambs. Well, I don't think so. That seems a little far-fetched to me. The best solution to this that I found is Matthew Poole's solution. He says that there were these different amounts of bulls and rams because there were 2 different ceremonies on Sivan the 6th. There was a ceremony for when the two leavened loaves were waved. And in Leviticus 23:20, we read about the waving of those two loaves. And then we see a bull and two rams. So the bull and two rams are for waving the loaves. But Numbers 28:27 says two bulls and one ram is just the offering for the day of the Feast of Weeks in general when the day begins. I think that makes sense to me. Now notice at the end of verse 19, there are also two male lambs for a sacrifice of peace offerings, which is the only festival day that has an extra peace offering. Verse 20, Leviticus 23 says this, the priest shall then wave them. It's talking about the two lambs for the priest offering. Now, a lamb is too heavy to wave, probably for the average priest, so it's probably talking about a piece of the lamb that represents the whole lamb. The priest shall then wave them with the bread of the first fruits, those are the two leavened loaves, for a wave offering with two lambs before the Lord. So the two lambs and the two loaves are offered or waved before the Lord. They are to be holy to the Lord for the priest. I've been saying a wave offering is from left to right. John Gill says it's left, right, up, and down. Toward the several quarters of the world, showing that fruits of the earth were owed to the providential goodness of God. Now we have a problem with peace offerings here, because if you recall, peace offerings are shared with the people. The priest and the people ate together a fellowship meal. This peace offering is for the whole assembly of Israel. How in the world is a priest going to share a meal with 600,000 men? Not to mention their women and children, which would put it up to about 2 million or so. Lots of people to be eating that lamb. Well, in this case, only the priest ate the peace offering. That's why probably it says in verse 20, they, the two lambs and the two loaves, are to be holy to the Lord for the priest. For the priest. The priest is going to eat all the peace offerings. Matthew Poole backs up that idea. He says this, quote, the priest, quote, had to themselves not only the breast and shoulder, as in others, and other peace offerings which belong to the priest, but also the rest which belong to the offerer. Because the whole congregation being the offerer here, the peace offering, could neither be distributed to them all nor given to some without offense or injury to the rest. So the priest ate this particular peace offering by himself. John Gill says that because this was a peace offering for the whole congregation, it was a most holy, not just holy, but a most holy peace offering, and therefore had to be eaten by the males only in the court of the tabernacle. Now the males might include some non-priest representatives of Israel, perhaps, I'm not sure. But at any rate, this was a special peace offering. We go down to Leviticus 23, verse 21. On this same day, this is the 50th day, 7 Sabbath plus 1 after Nisan 16, after the waving of the barley harvest, back there in March or April, and the second day from the second day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. On this same day, the 50th day, counting up until the Feast of Unleavened Bread, 6 of Sivan, on this same day you shall make a proclamation as well. You're to have a holy convocation. So we see that we have a high holy convocation, just say it means a high Sabbath. So we got a high Sabbath on 6 Sivan. You shall do no laborious work. You could cook your food and such, but you couldn't do manual labor or vocational labor. It is to be a perpetual statute in all your dwelling places throughout your generations. Again, in your dwelling places is probably put there because they're not supposed to do work in their dwelling places. Perpetual means until the Messiah comes and the law is done away with. It doesn't mean forever and ever. We go now to verse 22. We'll finish up this audio. Leviticus 23, verse 22. When you reap the harvest of your land, moreover, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, nor gather the gleaning of your harvest. You are to leave them for the needy and the alien. I am the Lord your God. Well, the first thing you're going to ask, what in the world is a law about gleaning put in the middle of the laws about festivals? Well, there's a reason for that. Remember, the Feast of Weeks is a harvest festival. In fact, some people call it the Feast of the Harvest. And so reaping at a harvest is a natural subject to address. The law is repeated here. It's already been mentioned in Leviticus 19, and it will be mentioned again in Deuteronomy 24. But it's repeated here so that Israel will remember the poor at the time of the harvest, as John Gill and Jameson Fawcett Brown say. The law was very, very cognizant of the needs of the poor. Now, of course, we know the law about gleaning. And also here, you shouldn't reap to the very corners of your field. That means not only you don't pick the gleanings off the droppings of the wheat and the wheat in this case, that land on the field, but also you don't reap all the way to the very edge of your field. You leave some stuff at the edge too, which is kind of interesting. Now, there were some restrictions on gleaning. This is from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. First, the poor could be kept out of the field until the harvest was complete. That's so the poor wouldn't abuse the landowner. The owners could choose the poor they felt the most deserving. That's so that lazy bones or scum buckets or people that were poor because they were drinking too much, you know, the typical stuff, could be left out so that people who were poor through no fault of their own could be helped first so they would not be short of grain. Jameson, Fawcett, Brown said that Leviticus 19:9-10, the law of gleaning, was the earliest law for the benefit of the poor that we read of in the code of any people. Jameson, Fawcett, Brown also say that the hearts of the rich would be strongly inclined to liberality at harvest time. And you talk to any farmer, that's when they're really generous. They start giving away their tomatoes and their cucumbers. And I sit back here and it just fills up my refrigerator. And I hadn't done a lick of work to get the fruit, but farmers always grow too much. It's so perfect time for liberality here. And what's the point of gleaning everything? You got all your harvest coming in, leave some for the poor. Now, verse 22 says, when you reap the harvest of your land, this is referring to when you get to the Canaan land, to the promised land, and start planting and become settled down. Obviously, they're not going to be reaping or harvesting while they're in the desert, which is where they are now, as God gives these laws to Moses. Ladies and gentlemen, we are finished with Leviticus chapter 23. That prepares us to move on. Well, I should say Leviticus chapter 23, verses 1 through 22, we're finished with. That should prepare us to move on in our next audio to Leviticus 23, verses 23 through 44, the end of the chapter, and we will continue our discussion of Feast of the Lord. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.